Stay tuned for Cinema Clash with Charlie and Hannah, featuring two film critics with distinctly different tastes in movies, Charlie Jewell of CharlieJewell.com and Hannah Buchdahl of ChickFlix.net. He thinks her tastes are shallow. She thinks his are pretentious. Listen in as they discuss and debate new releases and other film-related topics. Let the clash begin.
Hello and welcome to the Cinema Clash. I am Charlie Jewell of CharlieJewell.com.
And I'm Hannah Buchdahl of ChickFlix.net.
Hannah, we've got something going on here that we haven't had in a month, maybe more. The wine tastes normal. Like it's drinkable.
It's good. What is it?
All right, I'll show it to you, see if you can guess the film.
It's called Shh, Say Nothing More. Wow. I would say of the three movies we saw that it probably would be Zookeeper's Wife.
It is, because if you're hiding Jews in your basement, you want everybody to be very quiet.
Shh, that's
it. It's actually, the wine is it's from Church and State Wines. It's called Lost Inhibitions. And every words on the bottom are always different. So this one was, shh, say nothing more. The one next to it was, I'd wax my back for you.
Yeah,
and I didn't know which one that would go for.
yeah, I don't think that would have been very good for Zookeeper's Wife.
But this one, Zookeeper's Wife. You got to be quiet when
the
Hitler's chief zoologist is hanging around.
That's right.
But we did not see, as in they did not show us, the week's biggest film, Ghost in the Shell, remake of the Japanese animated movie starring Scarlett Johansson. They didn't show it to us, Hannah.
Yeah, I saw a few of our colleagues must have gone to like a screening last night, the first run of the movie, but they did not show it to us, and it did not particularly appeal to me anyway. So I didn't see the original.
I didn't think you would.
I know. We have a Japanese movie though on the slate for tonight, so that should count for something.
It's probably better than Ghost in the Shell. The original Ghost in the Shell is cult classic now. I remember I saw that back in 2002 maybe. I really liked it. I was kind of bummed when I heard they're making this live action version with a white chick in the middle of it, but it's got the same Rotten Tomato score as our first movie, The Boss Baby.
Uh-huh.
An animated film with the voice of Alec Baldwin, and they're both hovering around the high 40% mark.
Really? I'm surprised that Boss Baby is that low.
I'm not, because and I'll get to why. I'm just happy you saw it. Because Hannah, for those of you who, I don't know why you would know, went to the wrong movie theater.
I did. I couldn't believe it. I'm like, where is everybody? And I realized that I was in the wrong theater. But just by sheer coincidence.
Yes, who did you end up seeing The Boss Baby with?
I saw The Boss Baby as I infiltrated a private screening that was being held by Hewlett-Packard.
Huh.
So Hewlett-Packard, I guess, had some sort of integration with DreamWorks in the production of this movie, and they did a whole big commercial beforehand about it. They handed out vouchers for free popcorn and soda and things, which
Boom.
I felt bad, so I did not partake. But they were very nice, and they just kind of – I think they were so confused at my confusion that they just let me into to the screening. But it just happened to be at exactly the same time. But completely different theater. This theater you saw it at would have been way more convenient for me. But in the end, all's good because we can talk about it. And we both saw it.
All right. Well, last year, all the way back to last year, do you remember that we saw a movie called Storks?
Wow. Yes, I do.
So in Storks, there was a magic machine that just created babies and then the storks delivered them. In The Boss Baby, there's a magic machine that creates babies, but some of them get marked for families, in fact most of them, but some get marked for what you would call middle to upper management, and they stay babies for however long I think they perform admirably. And it's, I don't know, it's kind of off-putting to see a baby walk around with a better watch than I have and a better suit than I'll ever own, and just kind of run his sector of Baby Corp. Baby Corp makes the babies, and they're not delivered by storks, they're delivered by taxi. And what I noticed is Boss Baby works on two different levels. My kid laughed his head off because there's fart jokes in it and they talk about poop. I noticed myself laughing because there are enough adult jokes where I laughed. I noticed we never laughed at the same time. He would laugh something and then later on I would laugh at something. So we both kind of enjoyed it. I don't think I ever loved it, but the jokes landed.
They did. It's interesting that you brought up Storks because I'd forgotten about that movie entirely. But now that I think about it, it's very similar to this one in that that one as well was good. You know, like I remember walking out thinking that it was okay, that it was not anything I would remember in 6 months, which I obviously was the case. But I agree. The Boss Baby, I found myself kind of chuckling a lot throughout. There were tidbits that were thrown in, but it's not an adult movie. It's not a movie for adults. Like Lego Batman works on different levels for both kids and adults, and both can really go in and enjoy it, and you could send everyone to it. I would not send anyone without kids to go see this movie because it's still ultimately a movie for the kids, but the adults will not be in pain watching this because there are little things that are thrown in for their enjoyment.
It does skew towards the young. Boss Baby, voiced by Alec Baldwin, and he's really the same character he was on 30 Rock, Jack Donaghy, the guy in charge of General Electric. They're pretty much the same guy. They're CEOs. And he has come down now from Baby Corp heaven to an integrated with a family because he's on a mission. The family he is integrated with are executives at Puppy Corp. And he has been watching the pie chart. It's a zero-sum game. If Baby Love decreases at all, puppy love increases. So he's down here to stop the new puppy product launch. It's actually an extremely complicated
plot. I know, you're
plot.
Making it sound way more complicated.
But that's
than it
exactly
is.
What it is. But that's the subplot that takes care of the climax.
Yeah.
The main plot is there's already a son, a child in this family. He's 7-year-old Tim, and he is not pleased to see this baby. It disrupts his routine. He doesn't get any more attention. His parents barely know he's alive because they have a new baby in the house. So his mission is to get rid of Boss Baby.
Yeah, that sounds pretty cruel. It doesn't come off that cruel in the actual movie, but it's the kid has this really good imagination, and so you kind of don't know while you're watching it whether like what's in his head and what he's imagining the story to be and what the reality might be, and that was interesting, but it really is a movie that's ultimately about sibling bonding, and it's good for young kids who are maybe about to have a baby brother or sister. And it was just, you know, it's sweet and it was clever on a lot of levels. And so I liked it. I didn't love it, but I liked it enough. And I would suggest it really for anyone. I would say like four to nine, maybe.
Nine's a little high.
Nine's a little high. 4 to 8, 7.
I love it how when, no matter who it is, when you have to get to Las Vegas very fast, there's always a plane of Elvis impersonators taking off from the airport that you can kind of sort of sneak on. I just love it when that happens.
Does seem to recur a lot in movies. And I love the soundtrack of this movie. This movie had a soundtrack for my generation and earlier. I mean, no kids are going to know Dancing Cheek to Cheek playing in the background, you know.
I didn't notice it.
I enjoyed the music and there were just really fun moments, and there's the evil sidekick Jean who becomes Eugenia, who becomes like this evil Mary Poppins character.
Oh, yeah.
And so they just managed to just throw in these nuggets. Just when you would kind of get a little bored on the adult level, they'll throw in something that just makes the adults laugh.
And kids won't notice it, but they are kind of poking holes in corporate culture a little bit. When he goes on a tour, Baby Corp, like they are not so subtly making fun of, you know, white collar work.
Yeah, I think there is a line in there. It was like, aim for failure and you'll always succeed. That was one of my favorites.
No, mine is
his
alarm clock.
Oh, yeah.
It's kind of like Gandalf the Wizard.
Wizzy.
And they're in this metaphorical prison because they're grounded. And he's chained to the wall. And he says, if I could just get my hands on my magical shank, we could get out of here. And I just love
that. Did you happen to notice who the voice of Wizzy was? Because I think it's uncredited.
No, it's the director. It's like the director's brother or something.
Yeah,
okay. By the way, the director, by the way, is Tom McCarthy. He did the first three Madagascar films.
Which were also very good.
Claim to Five. I only saw the first Madagascar. And that one was much better. That one was much better than anything in The Boss Baby.
Well, yeah. I mean, those Madagascar was certainly stronger. But again, this one is fine. And I think if you're just looking... I know you hate when I use the word fine.
It's fine.
But if you are just looking for a cute, clever movie, I think it fits for kids. I think it fits the bill. And it was interesting. I was reading this morning. There was a review in the Washington Post Express that you can read on the Metro that was one of our colleagues, I guess, had taken her son. And she was saying that her son laughed his butt off and she hated it. And that when she tried to talk to him about it, he essentially stopped her and said, you know, don't yuck my yum. And I love that concept. It was like, don't yuck my yum. It's like, I'm enjoying this, so let me enjoy it because I like it. Don't yuck my yum. It was, yeah. So
I
think
that's brilliant.
Yeah. So it was Kristen, to give it proper due, Kristen Page Kirby. And she's the one.
Yeah, cause I was wondering why it must be different in the actual Post, because the Post, I think, was Stephanie Mary, maybe.
Yeah. So I don't know.
No, it was Pat Padua.
Yeah. So this was that Express newspaper that it's easy to read while you're riding. But I agree with that. And I think that kind of represents our discussions 90% of the time. Don't yuck my yum. You might not have liked it, but I did. So, you know, that's sort of the way it works. And she was coming around to his side a little bit and going, you know what? I should be okay that my kid really enjoyed this. Why should I try to convince him that it wasn't as good as he seemed to think it was?
I asked my son, what did he like better of the two movies he's ever seen in a movie theater? Rock Dog or The Boss Baby? And he said, I'm going to like them all.
Exactly. You know, when you're like 3-4 years old, that's okay.
Don't make me choose. I'm going to like them all.
Exactly. And I think I'm with him on this one.
All right. Well, I think we're going to have a similar dynamic in our next film. It's opening in much far fewer theaters, but it's in every state in the union at least. The Zookeeper's Wife, based on a 2007 nonfiction book by Diane Ackerman, based on a true story from Poland. And I never, ever expect to see rainbows and sunshine if the movie starts and it says Poland 1939. I know I'm in for it.
Yes.
And man, are you in for it. But it's not, and we're going to get into this, you call it a Holocaust movie. And I don't think it is. Because it's not the Jews are secondary. They're there a little bit, mostly out of sight, because, you know, you've got to stay hidden from the Gestapo. This is one of the most gruesome movies I have ever seen because of the amount of effort they take to impale, explode, and disintegrate animals.
I'm telling you, we were in a different movie because I did not feel that at all. In fact, I felt, as Holocaust movies go, because I disagree with you there too, it is a Holocaust drama. It's that focuses in on one particular story and this Polish couple saving these Jews. But I did not find it nearly as like just brutal to watch and horrific in some of the sounds and the visceral stuff that you see in like a Schindler's List.
And I wonder if you just glossed over that. Because last week I saw this movie called Raw. It's about a girl eating humans, pretty much. And nothing was as disturbing as... So apparently on September 1st, 1939, the day Germany decides to roll across the border, take care of Poland's token army, the Warsaw Zoo, of which our heroes, the Zubinski family, takes care of and runs the day-to-day business, apparently was a day one aerial target, because the amount of bombs dropped on this zoo, you know, did its job. It tore the zebra in half, killed mama and baby elephant.
You are fixated on the animals. See, I think that's the difference.
Because
somehow I'm fixated on the story and this couple and Antonina Zabinski,
because
Jessica Chastain.
It's what you remember afterwards, and they will remember.
I don't think so.
The bloodshed.
I completely disagree.
A chunk of this movie takes place in the Warsaw Ghetto, not a place you want to be hanging out in Poland during World War II. And you saw a lot of the Warsaw Ghetto in The Pianist, in Schindler's List. Mm-hmm. You really saw it. Here, you stay on the street, but you see things, and none of it is as awful as what they do to those animals. None of it.
I disagree. I think people are going – I don't think anybody's going to come out of this movie and think about the slaughter of these animals.
My favorite tweet I retweeted the other day was, I wish the animals would have gone Inglourious Bastards at the end and gone and killed Hitler.
That would have been great. Hey, I would have been all for that. But I was focused more on the story and this couple and the idea that and it took me a little bit to get over Jessica Chastain speaking with this Polish accent. That was a little weird for
me. My standard gripe: if you're gonna do it, have them hire Polish actors and have them speak Polish. Why have the actress speak English in a Polish accented English? I hate that.
I mean, it's been quite a year for her. You know, I mean, I loved her in Miss Sloane, and this is a very big departure. So she shows a lot of range by kind of going from one to the other. And she was very different again in Zero Dark Thirty. So she's a really good actress. And I think that's why I ultimately forgave the accent that was bothering me at first. And I loved the guy who plays her husband, Jan. Johan Heldenberg from the Broken Circle Breakdown.
He was great.
He's really good in this. And so the two of them, I focused on essentially their love story and them trying to get through this time and to kind of reach this decision together that they see this horrendous stuff going on in their own backyard, and that friends of theirs, Jewish friends of theirs, have been essentially imprisoned in the ghetto and are fearing for their lives. And they realize that they have an opportunity to make a difference, even if it's going to mean sacrificing their own lives, their own freedom. And I was focused on that and on the fact that the way they told this story was very endearing. And you were never, when you saw the interaction of people that they were hiding in their home, and there were moments of levity and I thought it was interesting because this movie comes out just before Passover, and there is actually a Passover scene in the movie as well, where it just shows that they were trying to still honor Passover while they were hidden away in the secret basement area of the home at the zoo. And so that's what I was focused on. I was focused on the idea of, oh my gosh, this is so timely, and people should really take this to heart, that there was this crazy leader and these people on the fringe who were buying into the craziness that was happening, and not just on the fringe, but it was seeping into the mainstream. And this couple realized that, you know, people needed to step up and do what they could do to stop it and to save people. And I kind of feel like it's a reminder, you know, 80 years later, it's like we still need to keep these things in mind, and you still need to be willing to step up and resist and speak out and stop humanitarian crises as they happen. And so I was watching it from that perspective and thinking, even if this isn't the greatest movie ever, it's still worth watching because it's got a message that's worth hearing.
Well, you're right about Jessica Chastain. She's an outstanding actress, and she's proved that over the last couple of years. And she goes a long way to showing how brave this family was and what they did. Now I want to tell you the two reasons why The Zookeeper's Wife didn't necessarily work for me. The first one is the main villain. His name is Lutz Heck. He's played by Daniel Brühl. We saw him in Rush a couple years ago. And yeah, he's your
Captain America Civil War.
A bit part, but yeah, he was in Civil War. And he says he is Hitler's chief zoologist. Didn't know he had one, but apparently he did. And he's hanging out in Warsaw instead of Berlin. I don't know why. And
yeah, I didn't quite get that either.
He's got two ambitions. He wants to recreate obsolete German mammals and attract the sexual attention of Jessica Chastain. And one of those scenes, he's mating bison, and he has her hold on to the female bison in front, and he kind of thrusts along with the male bison at the same time. I get it. It's a metaphor, director Nicky Caro. I get it, but come on.
He was creepy, and so that's
he was campy.
A lot. He was campy and creepy because he does have a campy look. It is very stereotypical in the appearance.
He seemed like a circus clown sometimes. Yeah, like, what are you doing?
But it was interesting because I didn't know what to make of his character at first. Like, you sort of felt some sympathy for him early on, and then you feel some sympathy for him later when he is being played to a large degree, and they're leveraging his lust.
He's not as dumb as you think.
Well, but for a while, they're leveraging the lust that he has for, Antonine, Antonina, for her, he's after her, and she knows that he's got a thing for her, and it's hard to watch the husband watching all of this. That's probably one of the more dramatic moments of the movie, is sort of the pain that he's going through.
Well, his
trying to balance it all.
I think he's just a little poorly written. And the second reason it doesn't quite work for me is Antonina's son. He starts out very young. He's probably 5 or 6 when the bombs first drop. And this takes place in the entire war. The last 30 minutes of this movie is them shoving in about four years, which is, it's actually terrible towards the end of how they try to do that. But he turns into a jackass at the end, and you don't know, there's no transition. One moment he's this young boy, and then the next moment she has a baby out of nowhere. And all of a sudden he's mouthing off to his dad and running away and being a jackass.
Well, he's suddenly going.
It comes out of nowhere.
But that's where that weird time shift.
There's a transition missing. She shows us time jumped, but doesn't tell us. We have to guess, like, oh, I didn't know you were pregnant and you just gave birth. And your son is now kind of giving the jig away because he's an idiot. And the last half hour of this movie falls off a cliff.
See, I don't think so. I think that the kid, because of that time jump, you have this kid that's gone from being a... probably like an adolescent, an 8-year-old, to suddenly being like a preteen. And so I think you're getting what can actually happen in that situation. And it's just been accelerated. And so there is that, there is the turn in character development that's missing because of the time crunch that happens.
I don't think this needed to show the entire war.
Yeah, I don't think it necessarily did. I'm not saying that the time crunch worked. But it all came back to me. It was the story itself. It came back to this couple and what they were doing, and having an uplifting message at the end, an uplifting ending, something that people could walk away from. No, but I mean, it's if they've read the book, they would know it. But it's not. Again, I think it's important to point out that it's not as really brutal to watch. It's PG-13. It's not an R-rated movie. Many of the Holocaust World War II movies that you will see are R-rated because they are much more brutal. And so, because this is PG-13, it is a little more family friendly for the older kids. And so, I think of all the movies out this week, this one is the most. Just sort of your adult drama. It's your only real choice in the mainstream for an adult drama to go see.
Well, we haven't talked about my favorite part of this movie, and it's a character called Ursula. She is...
That's brutal.
She might be 13, 14 when you first meet her. You meet her on the street in the Warsaw Ghetto, and, she's just a girl walking by. And you know something bad's about to happen because these Nazi guards, two of them, are kind of poking and picking at her. And then about 2 minutes later... Probably one of the worst things I've seen in a long time. She stumbles out in the street, just catastrophic looking. She's torn to shreds.
Yeah.
So Johan, is that his name, Johan?
Yeah.
Jan spirits her out. And Jessica Chastain, spends a good hour trying to piece her back together, reintegrate her into society, become a human being again. And she was good. That girl who played her was good.
Yeah, well, and just to fill in the story itself, was they basically convinced the Zabrinskis convinced the chief zoologist to allow them to convert their zoo into a pig farm, and by doing so, they were able to have this cover operation that allowed them to go into the Warsaw Ghetto to collect garbage from the Jews, and that's how they managed to create this smuggling operation. And so that's the gist, that their zoo became essentially a human zoo and a way station for shuttling Jews from the ghetto out to relative safety if they were able to. And so that's really that's how that all happened, and how Jan happens to be at the ghetto in order to witness these things happening and try and save people. So it's, it's unbelievable that after all these years, there's still a Holocaust-related story, sort of a similar to like a Diary of Anne Frank kind of story that we hadn't actually known about yet. And so that to me was kind of interesting, that that there are stories of heroism and you know, and survival that that might not have been known before. And so this is another one that ranks in that whole scheme of things, and just knowing about some of these really fascinating stories of people helping other people regardless of faith.
It is a good story. I like that I didn't know about it, and that, yeah, you're right. New stories keep coming out that we didn't know about. I just don't think it's very well made. Director Nikki Caro, I remember she really hit the big time when Whale Rider came out back in 2003.
I loved Whale Rider.
And more recently, in 2013, she did Disney's McFarland USA with the cross-country team that could. I do not think she made the best film that could be made about the story.
I think she made her type of movie, which focuses more on story than action. And
I'm not looking for action.
But her stuff, like I think about Whale Rider, I think about McFarland USA, and it's ultimately about the heart of the movie is in these main characters and their story. And so I don't think it doesn't rise to the level of a Schindler's List. I mean, it doesn't rise to the level of a Diary of Anne Frank.
Not even close.
But it's solid. It's good. It's not great, but
Nikki
I think
Caro's
it is good.
Best film was 2005's North Country with Charlize Theron, and the sexual harassment women who worked at the mine went through. That was a fabulous movie, and I hope Nikki Caro can reattain those heights one day.
I think she's doing all right.
So our final film is a Japanese import, not Ghost in the Shell. It's called After the Storm, and it's from a director, a very well-known Japanese director called Horikazu Korida. Now, he's a prolific director. This is really only the third film I've ever seen of his. I first saw him in 2004 with Nobody Knows, tough-to-watch film about kids left alone in an apartment and how they survive. And then in 2013, I saw Like Father, Like Son, one of my top five foreign films that year, about two boys who'd been switched at birth, but the parents don't find out until they're five. So do they keep their sons, or do they switch? A tough film, but ultimately rewarding. This one's a bit more casual. Our hero wrote a novel 15 years ago, and he won an award. It was a good novel. And then he became a gambling addict, and he got divorced. His wife left him. She couldn't take it anymore. Now his son is 11 years old. And he's falling on hard times, and he's a part-time detective spying on adultery cases. And he's not a very nice man. He has no integrity. But he misses what he didn't know he had. He misses his wife. He misses his son. He didn't when he was with him, but he misses him now, and he wants him back. But he's not really doing anything to get him back. He's not paying his child support. He's not getting a better job. He's not cleaning up his life. An interesting watch. Very detailed character study. I enjoyed it. It's thoughtful. Some might call it slow, but I really enjoyed it, Hannah.
I am some. Although it was slow, the first half in particular. I mean, this movie is nearly 2 hours, and I remember after the first hour mark thinking, it's called After the Storm. Has the storm hit? When's the storm coming? Because then we've got a whole, you know, the second hour. I keep waiting for the storm. And so it is a very slow movie. I got more invested in it as this typhoon was hitting, and it basically, the typhoon was an excuse for our main character and his mother, who's like a famous Japanese actress who really is the glue for keeping his family together, the matriarch. And she kind of, I think, sort of hatches this plan with him that they will use the excuse of the coming storm to have everyone under one roof, the ex-wife, the son, the father, and that it would provide this opportunity for them to kind of try and hash things out and bond. And to me, that was the more interesting part of the movie, was that second half, but it took a while to get there.
You know, I didn't notice until later, but you're with this guy in every scene. He's the main character, so you're supposed to be on his side. I'm rooting for you. I want you to win your wife's love back. I want you to get your son back. I want you to get on the right path. Write another novel. But he wasn't doing any of those things, and I noticed I really wasn't on his side. I was kind of rooting for the ex-wife to make good choices and good decisions for her son and kind of stay away from him. She has a new boyfriend. I wasn't necessarily rooting for her to get with him either, but our hero is kind of an anti-hero here, Hannah.
Yeah, he is. Is it Ryota, I believe, is his name? And he is, he's not the most likable guy, but there are moments where you feel, your heart sort of feels for this guy because it's like he recognizes his flaws. He totally knows that he's screwed up. He knows he needs to fix it. He really wants to, but it leaves open that question of can he? Is he sort of faking it, trying to be somebody he's not in an attempt to win over his ex-wife and his son? And so it was an interesting, it's a human observation drama. And so if you like that sort of thing, and you can be okay with following, it's in Japanese with English subtitles, so you can't really multitask while you're watching this one. But it's
your favorite hobby. I know.
My favorite hobby, and I tried. Fortunately, I was watching it while I was eating dinner, and there were a lot of food scenes in this movie. There's a lot surrounding food. The grandmother is constantly feeding
grandmothers
everyone.
Too.
Exactly. And so, so there are plenty of interesting scenes for the foodies out there too. But I felt some sympathy for him, and it's really about, you know, his efforts to grow or to reclaim who he was or who he wanted to be. And that was interesting.
And it made him seem like this is a real guy. Like, I feel like I could fly to Tokyo and meet this guy. Because in any other movie, halfway through, he would have had some epiphany. And when he figured it all out, got in a better job, wrote that book, bought his wife flowers, paid the child support. And he doesn't do that. And I was like, oh, this is – talk about real life. Because in real life, that's probably what happens. He still goes to the gambling track and loses all his money.
Yeah. And without giving anything away, though, the metaphor with the storm is that the grandmother's – her view, she loves typhoons. So while everyone kind of hunkers down and they're always getting slammed with one typhoon after another during the spring season – She lives in a building that obviously has been sort of retrofitted to withstand these storms, and that's why everybody kind of is okay with just sort of hunkering down in her apartment. But she loves the storms because to her, they clear the air. And so I think that's kind of what the metaphor for the whole movie is that this typhoon that's bearing down on them, that's brought them all together, is an opportunity to clear the air. And then you've got the next day.
I thought the metaphor was his tangerine tree. He gave his mom a tree, and it's a good tree, but it doesn't bear fruit or do anything a tangerine tree should do, but it's a good tree. It's like, oh, okay, there's the metaphor.
I like my metaphor better.
All right, well, to wrap up the week, we didn't see Ghost in the Shell, but we did see a Japanese film, and it's my favorite film of the week.
It's not. I it's fine for an art house person. You have to like a foreign film and an indie. It's Zookeeper's Wife is still going to be my favorite of the week.
But that last half hour of Zookeeper's Wife, you're going to be shaking your head going, really? You chose to do it this way?
I don't think so. I think you're overthinking it.
Kid's a jackass. And The Boss Baby, you have no business seeing this movie unless you have a child.
I agree.
Even for Alec Baldwin, who's good, you know,
he
but
is good.
You've seen this character before.
Yeah.
All right. Well, the wine was drinkable. So,
yes, thank you, Charlie.
It really feels like it ends on a good note.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, thank you very much for listening to the Cinema Clash. I'm Charlie Jewell.
I'm Hannah Buchdahl.
Thank you.
Take care.
Cinema Clash with Charlie and Hannah is presented twice each weekend on RadioSt.Pete.com at 5:15 Eastern on Saturday and 9:15 on Sunday mornings. Cinema Clash with Charlie Jewell of CharlieJewell.com. And Hannah Buchdahl of chickflix.net. Listen again for Cinema Clash on RadioSt.Pete.com.